Good morning. My name's Ruth. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm going to be talking for a little bit this morning, just a little actually, and then I'm going to invite up some of my friends to come and join me in a discussion this morning. So we are in the middle of a three-week series called Positively Lonely. We're looking at loneliness. There are discussion questions for each week in the series, so they're available online, and you can get hard copies out in the commons if you'd like to go through the material a little bit more and, you know, chat through some of these issues. And if you missed it, or if you need the reminder, last week we looked at how healthy self-acceptance and how understanding that we are loved and accepted by God can help us to open up to other people and to receive the love and the friendship of others. Intimacy with God enables intimacy with other people. So if you missed that and the wonderful dog story, then you can check that out online. And today we are going to dig in a little bit more to what does loneliness look like, and what does it look like for different people in different stages of their lives. So loneliness, as you may know, is actually very widespread. You may not know that that last year the UK appointed a Minister of Loneliness. Here she is, Tracy Crouch, smiling at herself in a mirror because she's got no one else to talk to because she's so lonely. I don't think I was meant to represent that, but it is kind of odd. But there she is. This is a cabinet-level government position, so this is pretty senior, because the UK is taking loneliness very seriously. This position actually came out, it was one of the recommendations of a very comprehensive study in the UK looking at loneliness, and that found that 13% of the population, if we can go to the next slide because I don't remember how it's phrased, but 13% of the population felt often or always lonely. And this study, this is one of the infographics from this study. As you can see, they found, I don't think this is particularly surprising to us, but that loneliness and being alone are not the same thing. 60% or more than 60% of lonely people are actually married. It's probably not a super shock to us, but yeah. So it is. It's not the same as being alone. Also, this study found some very serious health impacts of being chronically lonely. So you can see the risk of an early death goes up by 14%. This also has mental health impacts. So our perceptions of our relationships get distorted. We start thinking nobody likes me, nobody cares about me. Those kind of things kind of creep in when we're lonely for a long time, or often lonely. We can see that there are some real measurable physical impacts. It makes our bodies feel like they're under attack. It increases our risk of cardiovascular diseases and suppresses the functioning of our immune system. In fact, the summary was that the negative impact physically of being chronically lonely was the same as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, which is stunning, right? I think it's stunning. Well, the US doesn't have a comparable government position, but of course it does have a comparable problem. There's a study by Barna, which is a research firm that focuses on social and spiritual issues, and they found that 20% of adults say that they are regularly or often lonely. Actually, the American Psychological Association says that it's quite a lot higher than that. For example, they say 40% of people over 45 are chronically lonely. They say that people just won't admit to that in a survey like the one that Barna did. This study, though, also found that men are more lonely than women. And I think this one is surprising. Millennials are the most lonely generation, way more than elders. I think we tend to think, oh, if you're older, you're likely to be more lonely. And actually, they did not find that to be the case. Single people, as you might expect, more than married. But obviously, as we heard, a lot of married people also are very lonely. And I hate the wording here, but downscale, meaning economically disadvantaged people are considerably lonelier than people that are more wealthy. This last statistic that I included I thought was interesting. 31% of people said that they had no one outside of their immediate family that they could call if there was some kind of crisis. And among the economically disadvantaged, that percentage rises to 47%. It's kind of scary when you think about it. But despite being a widespread problem, there is this social stigma associated with loneliness. Again, according to the American Psychological Association, people are much more likely to admit to being depressed than they are to being lonely. Depression in our culture is seen as something that is not your fault, it's something that happens, whereas loneliness kind of has this connotation of some sense of inadequacy. You know, maybe you're lacking in social skills, or you're not very likable, or you should get out there more, make more effort. We tend to ascribe those kind of things. I'm not for one second saying any of that is true. But what happens, I think, is that a lot of people feel fear or they feel shame. And so loneliness becomes this kind of hidden problem. There's one initiative that I came across that's trying to combat this stigma associated with loneliness, which you might want to check out. It's called the Loneliness Project. So the idea behind this is that there's this building, that's just a screenshot, but you can go up this building, scroll up, there's so many different stories to this building. And each window, if you click it, will pop up a little story of somebody's sense of loneliness, how when they last experienced it, or a time when they experienced loneliness. And you can also submit these stories online. You can just fill out this little form and it puts your story in, and then they release three more stories each week to build this building. This building is pretty huge. And the idea behind this is that it allows people who feel isolated or alone to be heard, to have their story out there. I think we all want that, that somebody cares enough to read our story or to listen to our story. But also, the point behind this is that as we read these stories, we realize that we're not alone. Each story is very personal. Some of them are pretty heartbreaking, actually, a bit of a warning. But others of them are very mundane, and you think, yeah, I feel that too. And so the point of this site is that as we read other people's stories, we develop this sense of empathy and kindness towards people, realizing there are so many people out there who feel loneliness. And at some point, I think we all feel the same. So this site makes the point very strongly that loneliness is not a sign of weakness or inadequacy. To be lonely is to be human, or to be human is to be lonely. But we can support one another by listening to one another's stories. So you might want to check that out. So loneliness is a very widespread problem. It's a very serious problem with serious health and mental health issues. Is it a new problem? Well, some people think that it's getting worse. The rise of social media is often quoted as one of the reasons that people are lonely. Technology can be good. Projects like the Loneliness Project, I think, is a good use of technology. But all forms of social media, except one, have been shown to increase loneliness and sadness. The one exception being YouTube, which I guess we're all watching funny videos and things like that, and kittens and all that kind of stuff. And so we're all getting happier. Every other form of social media has been shown to increase dissatisfaction, sadness, and loneliness, because we see kind of the highlights of people's lives. Everybody looks so happy, they're having fun, they're out with their families and their friends, and we have the sense that everybody's doing so much better than we are. They're all loved and accepted and got lots of friends, and we're missing out. So it increases that sense of loneliness. Technology in general means that we can do more from ourselves on our own, and we can do more from home without leaving the house. So our social interactions, our in-person interactions, are decreasing, another reason people think loneliness is on the rise. We also are much more mobile. So we spread all over the country, all over the world. I think particularly in this part of the country, people move a lot, and so we have less of a sense of a community, and we have just less interactions with people that we've known a long time and that maybe we felt really close to, and then they move away, and that might even dampen our willingness to really invest in relationships if we think, well, people move on. So those are some reasons why people think that loneliness is increasing, but clearly this is not a new problem. Throughout scripture, which of course is very old, we see people struggling with loneliness. In Genesis is not necessarily the oldest book that we have, but it's the one that tries to reach back the furthest in history. And in Genesis 1, six times it says that God saw it was good. And then at the end of creation, God looks and says, it is very good. But then in the next chapter, in Genesis 2, we read this: the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. So the writer here seems to be saying that right from the dawn of human history, there has been loneliness and aloneness, and loneliness is not good. We were made for community. And down through the ages, people have cried out to God to help them in their loneliness. We read this in the Psalms. So this is the psalmist crying out to God, "Turn to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted." So as I mentioned earlier, we looked last week at how experiencing intimacy with God helps us to open up to other people, open up to being intimate with other people. But it doesn't replace our need for friends and for our need for community. In 1 Peter, we read this, "Cast all your anxiety on God because God cares for you." But scripture also reads this in Galatians 6, "Carry each other's burdens, and in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ." So this is both and, right? We need both. We are not called to be kind of independent followers of Jesus, and we've got God, so we don't really need anyone else. But we're called to be a community that supports one another, that bears one another's burdens, that's there for one another, that brings God's love to one another. And how do we do that? Well, I think it starts with listening to each other's stories, just like in the Loneliness Project. Learning about the burdens of one another's, not making assumptions about those, but really listening and understanding how we might help to carry those burdens. Because although we do all experience loneliness, I think at some times and different areas of our lives, we're all in very different places in our lives. We have different situations, different stages. And so we're going to do some listening this morning. And so I'd like to invite up my panelists, please. That's your cue. Give them a round of applause. Maybe they will. Anyway. Okay, so welcome all. If you don't mind, we'll just go around and if you could say your name and just a few words about yourself for those who maybe don't know who you are. So we'll start at this end and go around. Is that okay?
My name is Colleen, and I am recently retired and live by myself with my cat and Amazon Alexa, and who plays a very crucial role in my life. And I don't have children or an immediate nuclear family, but my mother and my sister do live close by.
My name is Derek. I graduated from college, University of Maryland, about 2 years ago. And I have been working at my job for 2 years after that, and I live at a house with 5 of my friends, so, yeah.
Sorry.
My name is Sarah House, and I am a stay-at-home mom to 3 kids, so I guess I live with 4 of my best friends, and a cat and a dog.
I'm Jean Triplett. I'm 86 years old, and I live alone, but I'm not lonely. I'm a retired teacher.
Great, thank you. And I should state very clearly, this is not the poster children for loneliness. I didn't like, oh, you're super lonely, let me get you out here. No, we're just trying to represent different life stages. And obviously, all of you guys have said that you can speak not just for yourself. That's not to say none of you have experienced loneliness, because I think we all do. But you can also speak to other people that you know that are in similar situations to you. So these are not the poster children for loneliness. Okay, so we heard from that UK study that being lonely can actually kind of warp our views of people and of our relationships, and can kind of almost create lies in our heads about, you know, you're not good enough, or you this, that, or the other. I wonder if each of you could say a little bit about what does loneliness look like to your peers, to people who are in similar situations to you, if you could speak to that. And what kind of harmful things do you find that either you say to yourself or that people that you interact with say to themselves in terms of loneliness? So Jean, do you want to go first?
Okay. All right. As you know, today people are living longer. All you got to do is look around you. You'll see a lot of canes passing you by. And census has given us some advice about seniors who are living, that many of them live by themselves. And they actually say that 40 up to 50% of seniors are living alone and lonely. Why? What is happening? Well, a lot of times their children have moved out. They've gotten depressed. I think the thing that really hits home hardest is that the spouse dies. I can relate to that. My husband died about 10 years ago. We had been married for 50 years. And it was devastating to me. I almost went crazy. I was crying and sitting and couldn't get myself together. I was angry, just going crazy. And then one morning I got up and put my shoes on, got in the car and drove out on Randolph Road, got out of my car and started walking. I walked, I know, for almost 2 hours. Tears running down my face, people looking at me wondering, what's wrong with her? And after a while, I went back to my car, drove over to McDonald's, and sat down, and I felt so good inside. Said, hey, you know, that walking helped me. What I found out, that exercise, physical tasks really helps you when you're feeling lonely. It gives you, it relieves you. And after that, I began to think, hey, you know, I can do this. I walk every day now, every day. When it rains, I go in my basement and walk. So I say, one, physical exercise is important when you're feeling lonely. Sometimes you don't have friends. My sister is 90 years old, and all of her friends that used to be close to her have died. Your children are grown and gone, but there are ways to improve your loneliness.
That's great. Thanks, Jean. So, Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the underlying causes of why people feel lonely, maybe in similar situations to you, and some of the things that go off in their heads?
Well, for me, it was a weird transition going from working full-time, you know, and having a side contract job and being basically a workaholic, to suddenly I'm home caring for this tiny, wrinkly, defenseless thing. And that's it. Like, my entire world now is about this baby. Sorry, he's really sweet. He's 10 years old now.
Not so wrinkly.
Not so quick. But having your entire life change in a moment like that can create a lot of stress and trauma for a person. And I see that in a lot of my mom friends, even those who have to go back to work. That's a real difficult time, because suddenly a lot of people who are surrounding them don't understand what you're going through. And that can cause a lot of loneliness and disconnect from your current peers, from society, because you're experiencing something they aren't. And for me, I was suddenly going to a stay-at-home position, which I thought, you know, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, I'll just go back to work. You know, somebody else can take care of my baby while I work, and then I'll come home and I can deal with him for a short while, and maybe that's best for my mental health, for my energy. But he turned out to be a happy, healthy child that I could deal with. But I was going through a lot of other transitions at the same time. We were trying to sell our house. We were trying to deal with a change of my status. And unfortunately, this was all in 2008 when the the recession happened, so we couldn't sell our house. I'm keeping the place clean with a tiny baby until he was actually not tiny anymore, 2 years old. And I felt like I was in this limbo, and I didn't seek out other people like me. I didn't try to join mom's group. I didn't reach out to other new moms or families who might have been dealing with the same situation. So that was a time of great loneliness in my life, because I just felt like, okay, well, this next showing is gonna be it, and then I can start my life. Then this next showing, 2 months later, that's gonna be it. And putting off building those relationships and those friendships really caused extra loneliness. Finally, I was just like, oh, I can't take it anymore. So somebody in my church at the time reached out to me, and they asked me to join their mom's club there at the church. And from there, I started getting out more, talking to more people, letting go of the previous life as the working person,
right,
to being a mom and embracing that new identity. And that helped. And that helped me move on.
Great. Thank you. So you both mentioned getting out, which is interesting. Derek, can you speak to some of this?
Yeah, I think specifically with millennials, I'll try to cover all of them. All the men too, I guess. But
yes, sorry about that.
I think an issue that people my age have had for a long time is just the fear of what's next. And I think social media probably has enhanced or made that bigger, because you see everyone posts their best moments, and you see all these people getting new jobs and getting in relationships and having kids, and you wonder, why isn't that happening for me, or what's wrong with me? And also everyone posts their best moments and not their worst moments, so you remember your worst moments usually, and you think that you're different. And I think also a new, more prevalent thing for people my age is a lack of feeling present, because it's very easy to, I think, numb yourself these days with social media and things like video games. If you see these things and you have fear, it's like, okay, rather than dealing with this, I'm just gonna go on a video game and numb my mind. And I mean, I do that too. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I think it's something we need to be aware of. And same with phones. It's so easy to just play on your phone for like an hour. And I think everyone deals with that, but especially millennials who grew up with it. And I think we feel really connected to it. And like social media, I think one thing that I've really noticed is that when you go on social media, you feel acceptance and connection, but I think it's a very shallow sense of it, because you're connecting with people who aren't really with you, maybe like old friends or acquaintances that you knew, and you get all these likes and it feels good. So you want more and more, so you keep doing it. But it can get to a point where you're doing it so much that you're not connecting with the people you're actually with. So you're connecting with people outside of your circle rather than the people in your circle. And I think a lot of people my age do that. Not everybody, but I see it around, and certainly with myself.
It's not uncommon, is it, to go to a restaurant or something and you see people sat with each other and they're both on their phone.
Yeah, and they're trying to connect with everyone. And like, it's in the back of your mind when you're out. It's like, I want everyone to see this, because you see them having fun. You want them to think you're living a great life.
Right.
And it's just, I think it's taken away from what's in front of you.
So rather than living in that moment, you're like advertising that moment.
Yeah. And I think video games can do similar things. I play video games, but especially like the big single player ones, you can find a real sense of accomplishment and even connection in that, and things that we crave, but when you turn it off, you didn't actually accomplish anything. And it's hard, you feel it when you turn it off, but when you're doing it, it feels very real, so you keep doing it. And I think it's very addicting, and can, I don't know, we'll see what happens with it, but yeah.
Thanks.
Well, I brought my social media up so that I could read something to Derek. here it is. But it's exactly what you said. It's the reason we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel. And I think there is a real danger there. Now, I am probably more alone than I have been at any other time in my life, but I don't necessarily feel lonely. Kind of like myself.
We like you too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've come to the stage of my life where I realize that I am deeply flawed, and those flaws are, just contribute to my essential charm. So, you know, I'm fine with it. I love sometimes the solitude and the quiet. I love to read. I love to sit in front of my fireplace with my cat and a really good book. And I can be really content there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't times when I feel lonely. I think there was a day in the last week or so where the only conversation I had was with the kid in the drive-through car wash, and I asked him if he was keeping warm. And then I went home and asked Alexa to put peanut butter on my shopping list, and you know, that was kind of it. And by the end of the night, I was reading, and I came across this really beautiful passage in a book, and I just thought, you know, I don't have anyone to really share this with. And I think if I go down that road, and actually, loneliness is something that I actually have really struggled with, and it was when I was younger. But even now, if I go down that road, I think people have something that I don't have, that I'm not lovable, that I'm not wanted, that I'm flawed. That's the reason I don't have those things. And it really can be deeply depressing. So
how do you not go down that road?
Yeah, can I move to this question
yes,
to
yes,
you?
Yes, that was a seamless segue if you've
yes,
not,
thank
if you're
you,
not
Ruth.
Drawn attention to it.
Okay, yes, thank you. So this is something that's really helped me. And many years ago in the dark ages before we had apps on our cell phones, I got a little watch band that had a golf scorekeeper on it. So like every time you hit the ball, you could click and it would, you know, keep track. So I decided I was kind of more of a glasses half empty type of person by nature, and I really felt I needed to work on being grateful and thankful for the things that I had in my life. So I used that to help motivate me. So every time I felt thankful, I'd, you know, give it a little click, and then I'd go, oh, can I beat this the next day? And kind of had a little competition with myself. But you know, that really deeply and profoundly changed my life. I think it has helped me to see just how rich my life is, and how even though I don't have maybe that nuclear family that is, or that one person in my life who's a soulmate or a kindred spirit, I have those needs met in a variety of relationships, and I have some really wonderful relationships. So I think being grateful has helped me to see what I do have instead of to focus on what I don't have. And then the other practical thing is to show up. You know, I think it's easy to remain isolated when you feel alone. And sometimes because I like the isolation, I will be like, I'd just rather stay home tonight and read a good book. But I think coming and getting out and making sure, it can be too much of a good thing. So I need to make sure that I do have opportunity to interact with people.
So we've heard gratitude, getting out. You both mentioned getting out, exercise. Are there other things that any of you do to really make sure that you don't sink into that kind of spiral of loneliness?
I don't know for y'all, but I always schedule. I'm a big planner. So if I put something on the calendar, I'm going to do it. So even if it's as simple as, you know, some days I just had to get out and run errands, if I had 3 errands to do, I'd split it up into 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then every day you have to get up, you have to shower, you got to get your kids ready, and go run that errand. And that keeps you from being stuck inside your little world and not interacting.
Right. Great.
I think I actively try to be more present. So I recently made my phone black and white so that it was a little less addicting, because I found that I could not control myself. And like, I would play phone games, and I think a day after I did that, I deleted all my games because they became really uninteresting. And I try to be more vulnerable. I've been trying to do that for like a year now, it was something hard for me. I think I especially struggle with sharing my problems because I've always thought they were really insignificant, but I don't think that's the point. And I think it's important, even like a story with my mom. This was like a year ago, if you can believe it, but I saw a spider before I went to sleep in my room, and I decided not to kill it because I figured it would kill the rest of the bugs for me. And then as I was going to sleep, I thought, oh, it's definitely gonna crawl in my mouth while I'm sleeping. And so I woke up at 4 a.m. with an itchy throat. And of course I thought, oh no, there's a spider in my throat. And I thought, okay, I'm gonna ignore this, it's fine. And then I started to think, oh, it's probably laying eggs in my throat. And so I realized I wasn't gonna sleep, so I went up to my mom upstairs and I said, Mom, I gotta go to the hospital, there's a spider in my throat laying eggs. She said, no, Derek, you're fine. You probably just should drink some water. I thought, oh, that's a good idea. And I didn't. It ended up just being a dry throat. So, I've had a lot of weird things. I have a lot of weird health things that I freak out about. And usually just talking to people, they like tell me I'm okay and give me ideas, things that I don't think about because I'm in this weird state of mind. And I've even had times where I didn't do that, and it led to like panic attacks and me just going down dark paths. And it's not just issues that being vulnerable that I've tried to share more, just like any of my ideas, things that I don't hear often that I think are silly, but I've always found that people are way more accepting and even connect with you more when you do share.
Right. Yeah, I think we often connect over those smaller, seem to us smaller things, because we can relate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than these big dramatic, like, okay, cool, but, yeah. Great. Go ahead, Jean.
I guess I have shared the idea of exercise. That really works. In fact, I am now enrolling in a senior center where seniors go to actually exercise. It helps. The other thing that I'm doing, I volunteer. Yesterday, would you believe it, most of the day, I was at a senior center playing bingo with the residents. You meet people, you find yourself laughing and talking and having fun. And at the end of the whole bingo, those who won get a prize. And that was, it was just wonderful. So I'm saying, get out, move around. I love to read. I belong to a book club right here at Cedar Ridge. And I enjoy that very much. I love to read. I love to write. I love to do scrapbooks, draw, paint. In other words, go along with the things that you really like to do. Enjoy yourself, especially if you're like me, 86 years old and alone. But you keep the joy coming. You keep finding things that lift you up. I also, of course, am very happy to be right here at Cedar Ridge. The D group here has been really enlightening. We get together, we laugh, we talk, and then sometimes we even go out together, go to a movie or go to somebody's house. So all I can say, and socialize. Maybe you don't have the number of friends that you would like to have, but go out and meet people. Now, I have some people who are sick right now. I make sure that I call them, send them a card. But you know what I've also found out? People, of course, do a lot of emailing and texting. For seniors, we'd appreciate you just do a phone call. It's so better when we can pick up the phone and hear you and talk to you, because believe it or not, I missed an email about the volunteer. And you just don't do that. If it's something that you want to do to liven someone else, especially if you're old like me, call them on the phone. Talk to them sometime. And above all, be real outreaching. Socialize. Keep yourself moving. You're not alone. You're not alone.
Thanks, Jean. So you mentioned there, Jean, that maybe something positive that's come out of a situation that you wouldn't want in terms of having more time and being alone more is that you've been able to tap in to some of your creativity, and you were talking about your... Yeah, and have anybody else seen anything positive come from times of loneliness?
I guess I've seen, I mean, it's definitely emphasized for me how important connection is, because I'm really unhappy when I'm lonely.
Right.
And so I think when am I happy? When I connect with people, that's kind of the opposite of loneliness. I don't know anything big, but just the importance of connection with people.
So has that made you more reaching out to connect with other people?
Absolutely. And I was just thinking about this. I don't. It's kind of related, but social media, another thing it does is, I think most people would agree that it's about the quality of friends, not the quantity.
Right.
But it's the total opposite in social media. If you have 50 friends, most people would say that's enough friends, and that's probably a lot of friends. But in social media, if you see that, it's like, oh, they have like no followers, they don't know anyone. And then you see someone with 1,000 friends, it's like, oh, they're really popular. But in reality, you could have 6 really close friends and be less lonely than someone with 1,000 friends, because they might not be especially close with anyone. I don't know, just a random thought about social media.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely has, in terms of reaching out and even just being myself, it's made that more important to me.
I have definitely become to value my time away from my children more. And I have worked harder at making connections with other people outside of being a mom than I ever did before. Before, I made all my friends through work. You know, it was, you know, I worked with you, we became friends, maybe once in a while we'd socialize outside of work, but usually not, because I was working. And now I make sure that I get away from the kids and go talk to other adults without them and develop my own interests and identity beyond being mom. And that really helps others as well, and reminding them that we don't have to just sit around talking about, you know, poop and grades, and it always comes back to poop. And that there is an interest and a person behind that.
So loneliness, I think, can give us that space to think about who am I apart from all the other stuff, right? The work and the
problem
kids.
Is that loneliness as a stay-at-home mom is you're never alone.
Right.
You are touched out. You're talked out. You are clung to constantly. And just trying to get space, physical space, is what you want. You've got loneliness while you're being smothered.
Right.
So being able to remove yourself from that is healing in many ways. And just being with someone else who's not going to demand something from you can help that loneliness.
Great.
Someone shared with me once this simple thing. If you're with a group of people and you want a drink of water because you're thirsty, use that as a trigger to ask, is anyone else thirsty? And so I think loneliness has really helped me to be much more empathetic to people. When I was thinking about this panel, a verse came to mind in Proverbs that every heart knows its own bitterness, and no one can fully know its joy. And I think, probably all of us have had times of deep, profound loss and sadness, that even if there were people around you, that's yours alone. No one can fully understand the depth of that. And we've also all had times of great joy, you know, maybe seeing a sunset or a newborn baby or enjoying a piece of music. And that's beautiful, but there's also some loneliness in that, because no one else really feels that profound sense of joy that you do. And so it's somewhat ironic, but it's almost like we're connected with one another by the fact that we have deep, profound things in our life that we don't have words to share, or we don't know how to convey those to people. And so that makes me try to be more present to people, to understand that about each one of us. We really aren't. It isn't unique. We all have those times of deep loneliness and a desire to connect. And I think also just spiritually, in some of my moments of deepest loneliness, I've also really had a deep sense of God's presence with me. And I don't say that I hate like trite Christian things, like they really annoy me. So sometimes that makes me shy away from sharing that with people because I don't want to be like one of those Christians, which is an interesting confession for church. But it really is true. I mean, one of my favorite verses is that God is near to the brokenhearted. And he really is near. And that is, I think, sometimes what our loneliness is drawing us to, is to moments where we're quiet and take time to let ourselves feel God's presence.
That's great. How can we best support? You know, we read that verse about carry one another's burdens. How can we do that? You know, sometimes we just, it's kind of, you don't want to assume anybody's lonely. You don't want to imply that. You don't want to, you know, intrude. How can we best alleviate loneliness for people that are in your circles or in your similar life situations? Do you have any guidance for how we can support one another? Anybody who wants to.
Well, for moms, so many people reach out right when a baby's born.
Uh-huh.
They deliver meals, they check on you, they help you out, and then about 6 weeks later, it all tapers off. So just checking in on people, inconsistent, inviting them to things, and when they say no, keep inviting them to things. You know, you don't know what's happening at home. You don't know what's frustrating them or causing them to say no at that moment. But sending a text first thing in the morning, hey, I'm going to be at the park later. If you feel like it, join me. And I've tried to do that more with my mom friends, just like no pressure, because if you try to plan ahead, somebody's always sick. And if it's just like, hey, I'm going this place, meet me. If you do, great. If you don't, that's fine. And consistently.
I have found loneliness a time to learn. I have learned so much just from prowling around and trying to find something that makes me feel good. Something new, not sitting in front of the television all day, that I see a lot of people doing, even in the nursing home that I was at yesterday. The most positive thing that I have acquired through loneliness is prayer. Having talks with God. And I find myself, even if I'm moving around, cooking or whatever, I'm still touching with God. And those moments really have made me feel that I'm not alone. That he's with me. I'm not alone. And I know that sounds like, well, are you kidding? No, I'm not. I feel braver and going about doing things, socializing, doing things that I wouldn't normally do because I think he's with me. And that's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. He's brought me comfort and energy. I find myself doing things around the house that I wouldn't normally do. You know, when you get old, you don't do certain things anymore, like dusting.
You don't do it when you're young either, but anyway.
Running the vacuum cleaner, well, you have to be careful with that. So what is the most positive thing that have come from loneliness for me is just knowing I'm not alone because God is there with me. That makes me feel very much with someone else.
That's lovely. And what, Jean, can we do to support other seniors maybe, do you think? Is there anything in particular that we as a community can do to help seniors who might be experiencing loneliness?
Oh, yes. Well, first of all, communicate with them. Say, like right here at Cedar Ridge, you know, speak to them. Give them a hug. And I'm going to use a word here that I don't know whether you say, well, are you kidding? Be sincere. There's so many people who come up at me and say, oh, hi, Jean, how are you doing? And go on by. And I don't really feel like they're that concerned. They're just doing that. Reach out to them. Talk to them. Invite them to your house. Volunteer somewhere where a lot of lonely people are. You'll find yourself feeling better. You help them to feel better. But boy, when I left that nursing home yesterday, I felt good. My daughter went with me. We were both smiling when we left. Reach out. Let me tell you something. You may be 20 years old, 30, 40 now, but you will get old. There was something my grandmother, who was just a wonderful person, used to say to me, Jean, remember the golden rule. That's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. You don't know it, but time passes. And after a while, you're old. You're old. Believe me, I've done that. I grew up with my grandmother's family. And as I watched some of them pass away, I'm standing there, 15 years old. Huh? But let me tell you, you get old too.
Great.
Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And that's also in scripture in Matthew. I think it's 7:12. So check it out.
Thank you, Jean. Any thoughts on this side?
Yeah, I'm going to let Derek have the last word, so I'll jump in here. Yeah, oldness has crept up on me too. I don't know how that happened, but it does. And I think one thing, especially when you live alone, you don't, I mean, other than my cat tripping me when he wants something to eat, you just don't have any human touch. And I think something that is helpful is to give people a hug, touch their arm. I mean, obviously, I mean, if I don't know someone, I usually ask for permission first. I'll say, you know, is it okay if I give you a hug? But that's something that's really meaningful to people. And I also, because my mother is in assisted living, I've had a lot of bingo in my life lately. And with people that sometimes the next day when I come back, they don't remember that I was there the day before. So, but I really, I try to touch people. I try to touch their hand. I try to touch their arm. And I know that that really means a lot to them. The other thing, and this is like just a really difficult for me, and it probably doesn't apply to everyone, but I'll throw it out anyway. I hate to go to social events where I don't know people by myself, because so many people are, you know, they're there with their spouse. And so, like, even when I walk into our community center, we have a happy hour once a month, and I walk in and, you know, everyone turns and looks at you, and a lot of them I might know individually, but because they know one another as a couple, they're setting as couples, and they'll, you know, they might say, hi, Colleen, but then, you know, you're just kind of standing there. And so if you do go to a social event and you see someone alone, or even in your neighborhood, if you're having a party and you and your spouse are going, but you know there's a single person, just, you know, check and say, would you like to walk over with us? And so I think being inclusive of people, being sensitive to the fact that they are going into a lot of situations by themselves, and trying to be sensitive to them and figure out, you know, can I incorporate, would it be appropriate to incorporate them?
Great. Derek, last words of wisdom.
Yeah, I think, I don't really know the best way, but I think most people need to find things themselves. So the idea of being more present and aware of your surroundings probably has to come from yourself, but I think we can push people towards that by being vulnerable with them, and especially sharing like hard times in your life. Like, I know it seems like I'm in a great spot, but it wasn't easy the whole way. There were hard times. It was always scary, and I had to overcome things. But I think just in general, especially people my age, like just telling them, get off your phone, get off social media, get off video games. No one's going to listen to that. Especially, there's not everybody, but there is some mistrust with like older generations. But just coming up and having a fun conversation or a vulnerable conversation can be really meaningful, and people will maybe reflect on that and think, oh, that felt like real connection, and that felt like more. And that's kind of what happened to me. And I think Cedar Ridge was a big part of that for me, because I grew up here and I did a lot of things where I connected with older people and people my age too, who connected with me. I kind of realized over time that meant a lot more to me than other things.
Great. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you. So we're just going to take a couple of minutes now to talk at our tables about, I think we have a question on the screen. Do we? Yeah. So share one thing you do to reduce loneliness, either your own loneliness or the loneliness of other people around you. So we'll just take 2 minutes at our table to discuss that. We're going to move now into a time of communion, a time when we come together as a family, as a community, as people who are called to carry one another's burdens. We read this in the Psalms. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. God has set us in a family, not just our nuclear family that we may have elsewhere, but in this family. This is also our family. We're children of God. We're brothers and sisters. We come together to support one another, encourage one another, carry one another's burdens, listen to each other's stories. Sometimes communion can be a very solemn event when we think and focus on the cost to Jesus of his love. But today we're going to just focus on the joy and the gift of community, of being a family together, brought together by love, the love of God that brings us together and holds us together. So as we come and eat and drink symbolically together, let's look at one another. Let's smile at one another. Let's not be too somber about this, but to really see one another and to really celebrate that we are a community. So let's just pray together. Heavenly Parent, from whom all families take their name, we thank you for our community. We thank you for each and every person in this room and part of our community that's not here right now. We thank you for one another. We thank you that you have brought us together to love one another and to be there for one another. I pray that you would give us eyes to really see each other, to really make time for one another, to listen deeply to one another. I pray that you would help us to deepen our relationships, to be willing to be more vulnerable, to strengthen that desire to really to support one another. I pray, God, that where there's been any hurt or misunderstanding or feelings of being neglected, that you would give us a desire and a commitment to let go of that hurt, to forgive, and to really reach out to one another. May we see beyond our own needs and really see the needs of others. Help us to be truly a family where no one needs to feel alone. Amen.